Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. For this week's Images of the Past segment, we welcome back longtime radio broadcaster Chuck Anderson. Chuck, welcome back to the show.
It's good being with you, Lori. And by the way, as one Marine to another, thanks for your service too, Lori.
Thank you as well, Chuck. I didn't know that you were in the Marine Corps.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Tell me a story. What did you do?
Well, later. It would take years, you know, okay, to go through that. Because I'm sure between you and me, we held back the Huns from invading Austria.
we'll tell those stories when everybody else doesn't have to suffer through them, I suspect.
That's right.
Yeah. Some of my coworkers are rolling their eyes. Not another Marine Corps story.
Another Marine Corps story.
Well, let's talk about a truly compelling story, because you've got Ted Spalding, someone you talked to, World War II veteran, spent some time in the Philippines.
Yes.
Put this in context for me as far as when you spoke with him.
Well, General Spalding was everywhere in South Dakota. You couldn't hardly move without running to him, either on a board or he was so active. Besides his military career, which he came out as a brigadier general, he was one of South Dakota's most famous Army generals. And he did a lot of speaking, and that's when I had a chance to meet him once, and I said, I'd love to have you on my show. And he says, great. And he isn't a real big man, or wasn't a real big man. And when you look at him, it's hard to believe he could have survived all of the torture and the things that happened to him during World War II. But he also served our state, Lori, as a businessman, a state senator representing Huron, a high school teacher at Huron for 9 years, and serving the South Dakota National Guard as Brigadier General. And the guy is amazing.
Incredible. Now, Chuck, we have a little clip from part of that interview. Do you mind if we just play it? Yeah, let's listen.
We had very little time to learn. It was most unfortunate. That should never, ever be allowed to occur again. But you have to remember that in the middle 30s, not many years before the war started, the story I heard was that the regular Army was allocated 8 rounds of ammunition per soldier per year.
Wow.
And they were feeding troops on something like 17 cents a day. That's how unimportant our military budget was to the general public and the Congress. And when you organize an army and put officers in charge with 10 days of training, and very shortly thereafter send them off to fight a war, that is a disaster. And it never, ever should happen again.
Where did they send you from Washington?
We went to San Francisco. Again, here's a silly little story. It was a top secret meeting. No one was told where we were going. We left all of our equipment at Fort Lewis, just took our personal gear, got on a train, and went to San Francisco.
Secret meeting?
Secret. When we pulled onto the Embarcadero in San Francisco, we opened up the windows on our train, as you could do in those days. An ice cream vendor went by, and he said, "Who are you?" We said, "We're National Guardsmen. Where are you going?" "We don't know." He said, "What's your unit designation?" We told him. He said, "You're going to Manila." So we got the word from an ice cream vendor.
And did you go?
Yes, we went early September of 1941.
If you're just tuning in, that is Chuck Anderson, broadcaster Chuck Anderson, who's with me on the phone now, and that's a recorded clip from his conversation.
It's amazing we won that war, isn't it, when you listen to stuff like that?
Yeah, but don't you just, I mean, I think everyone who's been in the service has a story about not being told,
oh yeah,
you know, where you're going, not having any idea what's happening next, and not to that extreme. 8 bullets a year per soldier is
isn't
a pretty exceptional detail that gets left out of a lot of the history books. You've got to talk to the real people for that. Now, Chuck, tell me more about what happens. Because he started out as a private first class. He gets promoted to an officer very quickly. Again, little training, little direction. And what happens next in the Philippines?
Well, he was a man of, he would say, extremely good luck. When he joined this National Guard unit in California, it just happened that they didn't have any lieutenants. And they were 15 lieutenants short in this battalion. And he says, well, I'll be one. In 10 days, he was commissioned a first lieutenant in the United States Army.
Wow.
Isn't that something?
I could make an Army joke there about how they select lieutenants today, but I'll lay off of it.
Okay.
Out of respect for the Army.
Right.
I'm sure it's changed, I'm sure.
Or maybe not.
Oh, we've gone off the rails, haven't we?
Yeah,
so he's at Clark Field, which I think I've been to Clark Air Force Base at one point. So I'm assuming there's some connection between the two with a similar name. In 1941, and now news comes about Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
And they're not surprised. This is something that they've been keyed into.
That's right. And I didn't realize this until I spoke with General Spaulding. I didn't realize that the Japanese came right from Hawaii after smashing Pearl Harbor. They went directly just the next day to Clark Air Force Field in the Philippines and proceeded to just, as General Spaulding said, it just blew it to smithereens. Hmm. They didn't leave a thing standing. They even blew up bulldozers and trucks and stuff.
Yeah, I guess I didn't know that either until I listened to, you know, and he was there and sort of saw that begin to happen. So Japan is trying to capture the Philippines at this point. They want it in the territory, and for people who don't, you know, have the World War II history down, it's a lot unfolds there.
Yes, it really is. It's, you know, as they always say, you have to go back and look at history if you don't want to repeat it. Mm-hmm. And hopefully from that interview with General Spaulding, we won't repeat some of those tragic errors that we had made, or we won't be around. We'll be speaking a different language, probably Japanese or German or something.
So they were undersupplied, undertrained, and what were some of the other mistakes that were made?
Well, they were given 8 bullets. Isn't that something? 8 bullets, and then they didn't have those 8 bullets when they left Clark Air Force Base. When the Japanese bombed, General Spaulding, who was then a lieutenant, they were called into combat, and they did arm-to-arm combat with the Japanese as they invaded. And it was just terrible. And the general recalls how they were not prepared. He said, you just can't be prepared for something like that.
Mm-hmm. So there's a surrender. Then at that point, they're really overrun, and food is rationed. People are sick. They're not strong enough to fight, you know, for one thing, and so they're overrun. What happens next?
Well, they had 30 days of rations for food, and that ran out. And when that ran out, that's pretty well where they also ran out of the ability to defend themselves. And the Japanese came in and took them over. Mm-hmm. They went on this infamous Bataan Death March. They marched the soldiers and the Philippines. By the way, a lot of people don't realize the Philippines lost an awful lot of their people. They had 60,000 men in that fight, and before they even got to Bataan, they had lost 30,000 of them just to death disease and hunger and starvation. And we lost a great deal of our American soldiers and due to the same thing. It was just a real tragedy. And I was looking in some of my research, Lori, before I knew I was going to be visiting with you. I looked, there was a newspaper article from that period. And it says, the title says, Japs slay and torture Bataan prisoners. Yanks starved, beheaded, and buried alive by captors. And that's something.
That's the news that's coming home. Ted Spaulding is there, and he tells the story. You can go online, by the way, on sdpb.org, and you can listen. You can read about this and listen to some of the you know, highlights of this interview, the full interview of Chuck Anderson did with General Spaulding. And he speaks of, you know, being on the march and what that was like and really being at the mercy of your captors, some of whom were better human beings than others, and trying to keep up with them as they were on their bicycles. So
they hadn't eaten for a week. Can you imagine? the last thing that they had when they left the Philippines was they had one cracker for breakfast, and that was their ration. And the Japanese gave them nothing to eat for a week until they got to the prisoner of war camp. And they also they said the worst thing was a lack of water. Mm. And the only water they ever had was, fortunately, the United States military had years before helped the Philippines out by digging wells because they had so much malaria. And fortunately, along the ditches were these running artesian wells. And if it wouldn't have been for them, Ted said, they'd have all died.
How did he survive? So many people did not.
Well, that, you know, that's a very good question. Because at the end of the interview, I had asked him that same thing. And he says, well, you know what? He says, Chuck, when you get mustered out of the Army and you get back from overseas and stuff, he says, you go through the guys that have the needles and the people that check your toes. And he says, and the last guy was the psychiatrist. And this is interesting you said that, Laurie, because the psychiatrist asked Ted the same question, what kept you alive? And yeah. Ted, you got to remember, was born in North Dakota. Ted says, frankly, doctor, I spent 19 years in North Dakota. Nothing wrong about our North Dakota neighbors.
Right. And maybe the subtext there is he still kept his sense of humor.
That's right.
Through everything he had suffered through, he came out and he cracked a joke.
You know, he was also prepared. This didn't happen by accident that he survived. When he was in Manila, in the bay, when he knew they were going to go by ship and get transported all the way up to Japan, he thought it wouldn't be smart to be on these ships when they're being bombed by the United States Navy without something to keep him afloat. And he actually made a makeshift life jacket out of oak cans and two empty canteen canisters, which saved his life and another man's life when they did get hit by a U.S. Navy bomb and got sunk.
When you talked to him, did you get the sense that he had really, you know, integrated this part of his life into a really successful life and, you know, a fulfilling and meaningful life when he got home? Did you have a sense that that experience helped, or that he was able to process it and put it to good use, I guess is what I'm asking?
Yes. He was an unusual man. He was not only tremendously organized and very brilliant, by the way. He had gone to a couple colleges in California during the Depression when nobody had any money, and he did odd things. And he also, when he moved to Huron, he also got a degree from Huron College. And his compassion for, I could feel it when I was visiting with him during our interview, his compassion for people was just amazing. The way that he talked about the high school kids that he had in his classrooms, and that he tried to give them an understanding for a better life. Boy, I'll tell you, it just makes you really proud of South Dakotans when you listen to guys like this.
Yeah. Chuck Anderson is with us today, and as we wrap up, I just want to remind our listeners you can go to listen.sdpb.org and find all kinds of interviews and conversations and material that supports the work that Chuck did over the years. Chuck, it is a great privilege to sort of learn from you as I do this work here at South Dakota Public Broadcasting. Always great to have you on the show. You had a great conversations with people over the years. You're a lucky man.
Well, thank you, Laurie. It's good being with you.